everybody. Welcome to the New in Chess podcast. In the New in Chess podcast, we talk to leading grandmasters, authors, trainers, and other personalities from the fascinating world of chess. The New in Chess podcast is brought to you by DGT, the chess innovators. DGT is the only brand that provides everything you need to broadcast the games of a chess event, from chess clocks to sensory chess boards. My name is Dirk-Jan ten Keuzendam. Today, Grandmaster Luc van Wely returns to the podcast. Luc is a 8-time Dutch champion with a rich career. He's won tournaments all around the world and reached as high as 10th place in the world rankings. Luc is still active as a player, but his activities are more and more shifting to coaching and training. I've invited Luc to talk about the World Cup that is going on right now in Goa, India. The World Cup started almost 2 weeks ago and will continue for close to 2 more weeks. There's a lot to talk at stake in Goa, as the top three finishers will all qualify for the candidates tournament in Cyprus next year. Luc has just returned from Goa, where he was as the coach of Dutch Grandmaster Max Warmerdam, who was knocked out in the second round by American Grandmaster Ewander Liang. Luc, welcome to the podcast. Great to have you.
Yeah, thank you, Dirk-Jan. It's now my third time to the podcast, and I'm not sure if I'm the record holder by now, but anyway, thanks for having me.
A pleasure. As said, you just returned from Goa in India. We follow the World Cup online and in videos. But it's always good to speak to someone who has actually been there. How would you describe the event? I mean, what kind of an impression did it make on you?
Well, you know, I've been playing the World Cup myself a couple of times. I think I played basically from 97 till, I think 2007 was my last World Cup. And then, I stopped basically bothering about the World Cup, and I had different priorities in my life, and I didn't want to go through this qualification systems by playing the European Championships and stuff like that. And so this was actually the first time I was as a coach, and when you play this, I know myself, when you play this World Cup, basically you live on the edge. I mean, any mistake could be your last one, because it's just a 2-game match. So yeah, so when you coach the guy, my guy Max Warmerdam, he was already living on the edge in the first round, you know, so at least we survived that round, which I have to say it cost us way too much of energy, emotions, and stuff like that. And the second round, we were underdog against Ewander Liang, which doesn't mean that you have to lose, but first game he should. These have made a draw, but after losing the first game by a blunder, then you know you have to take risk in the second game, and it went wrong. But okay, you know, World Cup is always nice to follow, especially because it's not basically, you know, there always will be a winner in a match, which is something I like. So you see all kind of strong players, you know, suffering a lot of surprises. Well, I mean, maybe surprises for the general public, but if you've been there in this situation, you know that there's always some upsets. So for me, it's business as usual.
Yeah. What kind of venue was it? I mean, it's in Goa, which is a touristic destination where people go for let's say summer holidays or beach holidays. the place they were staying at, the Rio Resort, beautiful name. And how were the circumstances there? I mean, was the venue to your liking?
Well, I can tell you how I look at it. You know, I mean, I just care about the food. I mean, you're going to India and everybody's always afraid to get ill, you know? You know, but, you know, there was basically, I had no complaints at all. And, you know, and after the tournament, when Max was already out, Lucas van Verreest, the second of Joran van Verreest, he invited us to have some sugar cane. We went outside on the street to drink some sugar cane, and which normally
very risky.
Normally if we were in a tournament, you know, I would not dare to take this kind of risk, you know. But since it was the tournament was already over for us, and since Lucas was still alive, you know, so we said, okay, let's at least see how it was.
But was it a treat on his part or a challenge? Because, I mean, Lucas, he also likes to live dangerously, and so do you. So
It was both, obviously, you know, because actually it was kind of nice, but also I think he was kind of testing us, you know, if we were willing to try this, you know. And okay, because Lucas, he's always doing some kind of crazy stuff, you know, and buying raw meat in India and okay, whatever. And so
really,
so, yeah, so maybe he has a stronger stomach than us, but but basically,
but you both live to tell the tale.
Absolutely, yeah. Obviously, I think we both kind of in good shape, so that of course helps a lot, but still, you know, I was initially a bit hesitant to follow up, but then, okay, the competitor in me couldn't say no anymore.
Yeah. Well, we've seen that one of the, favorites who was eliminated early was Jan Nepomniachtchi, and he was quite outspoken about his dislike of the circumstances and also his complaint about the food, that he said, okay, how much pineapple can you have? And was that a loser talking, or did he have a point?
I think it was a loser talking, you know. And I think he really came in the wrong state of mind that he was not going to like India or Goa. And okay, I mean, of course, maybe the hotel was not what we consider, let's say, normally a 5-star hotel, but come on, we will survive. Yeah. I mean, we will live, you know, no matter what.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're there to play chess, and you don't get ill, you get your sleep. I mean, okay. So, I mean, there's always something to complain about. And I think the biggest complaint was about that the internet was not working so well, at least not in the beginning. But yeah, of course, you know, chess player without internet, it means chess player without cloud engines, you know, and without cloud engines means without preparation, which means, you know, that's more than, that's more lethal than, you know, Indian food, let's say.
Yeah. But how good does your connection have to be for the cloud engines? I guess you need a really good connection there.
You need a stable connection. That's all.
And, that's all. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, because sometimes you know, when I speak to the other Dutch guys in the chat, I say, "Oh, is the cloud down?" And then it normally means that my internet is down and I'm getting kicked out. You know. So brilliant.
I see. But well, you described the circumstances that you have to adapt to. That is something that always was your strength when in the early days of your career, that you were looking for this kind of challenge, going to all these big opens. How important is it for a chess player to be able to cope with that? I mean, it's clear that it bothered Nepomniachtchi.
Yeah, well, actually, I had yesterday a discussion with a young boy from Netherlands. I'm training him, and he said, like, I offered to draw because I had a headache. And so I said, well, okay, is this the first time you had a headache or last time you had a headache or what's going on? Right? It's like, so, yeah. I mean, you have to be prepared to play under suboptimal circumstances. Yeah, it's not, you always have, or it's the food or the jet lag or whatever, you know, and you need to have, and everybody is basically playing under the same circumstances. Mm-hmm. Only question is how well are you dealing with it, you know, and if you have a preset state of mind, like, for example, I think Naples has, I'm not going to like the hotel, I'm not going to like the food, you know, okay, then, okay, and if you play, for example, if you used to play Waikanae, I mean, you might also not like the weather. And still you have Indian players who come to Holland to play in Waikanae, and I cannot imagine that they love the weather there. But still,
you mean they don't normally complain about that. It's just, that's how it is.
Yeah, they are, let's say, much tougher than players from the West, for example, you know. Maybe they have been raised in different circumstances, maybe more difficult circumstances than guys in the West.
Well, and probably your young pupil, he hasn't been raised on the books of Max Ober, because I think one of the statements by him that I always remembered was, a chess player is never ill. I mean, it's never an excuse.
Yeah. It reminds me of the days that I was working with Kamsky, and then we had a 10
you're going in overdrive.
Yeah, then we had a 10-hour work day, and then Rustam was asking me, look, are you tired? And I said, I'm never tired. And then he walked away with tears in his eyes. You know,
yeah,
this is what he liked to hear.
Yeah, well, as said, there's a lot at stake in the World Cup. Three spots in the candidates, and also the first place is quite interesting financially speaking. It's $120,000. When I look at the top 10 seeds, then the number of top seeds that has been eliminated already. I mean, we're now at the end of round four, is amazing. I mean, almost the complete top 10 has been knocked out. Is that a sign that they are too spoiled to play under these circumstances, or are there other things at play? How do you explain this?
I wouldn't
Or should we look at them individually?
I think they're not spoiled in some way, but it's maybe more that other players have been not receiving the respect that they deserve, you know. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, we are a bit spoiled with the top 10 players, and you call them Pragananda, Gukesh, Irigaishi, Nakamura, Fabi, Kemer, you know, but I mean, the difference is not that big with all the guys. And all the guys, they just they prepare well, you know, and they are, I mean, they can be dangerous. So, and I was reading some comments, for example, oh yeah, well, Prague will definitely qualify after he survived the first round against this guy from Australia. But he was almost kicked out it was called the second round, but first round that he played, and I don't know why people think that it's so easy to win this World Cup. And okay, unless your name is, let's say, Aronian, who won it twice. Yeah, but yes. So I think that they underestimate the place. They also underestimate the strength of the tournament of course, when the tournament goes on, players, they get tired. Tired means more mistakes, and more mistakes means it become more like a lottery. So your strength doesn't matter anymore. It's just about who's making the last blunder. So I think it in some way you can call it surprises, I don't really agree with that.
Well, it's probably a matter that people look at from different sides, because it has often been said that the elite players, that they were privileged that they are only playing these elite tournaments, and if you put them in an open tournament, then they will have trouble doing well there, which very often turned out not to be the case at all, because they were dominating there as well. At the same time, it is very difficult to prepare for a tournament like the World Cup anyway. I mean, for anyone. And it's funny that you mention Levon Aronian, who won two World Cups. I remember the last time that he won in Tbilisi. Then the way he approached that tournament was like a military campaign. I mean, he was so well prepared with his team. He had an assistant with him who helped him mentally and physically every day, and he very much had a plan. And I'm impressed that he's doing well again here, that he's still in the race. So there is a way that you can prepare for this, but it's easy to go wrong, probably.
Yeah, well, I mean, basically, it can go immediately wrong. Yeah, it's you live on the edge, and especially in tie breaks, God knows what's going to happen. So, but I think maybe. Levon is, for example, he has this kind of style, like go big or go home. So he has the style that he can win these events, and he has the style that he can go home just after the first round. So, he has been very successful recently. I mean, he won this freestyle in Las Vegas, and there was another event that he won, but Grand Swiss, it was pretty miserable. Yeah. So,
you mean he's a player who is in a flow, or he isn't in a flow?
Yeah, and also the fact that that he's a proven winner, that he has been there before. He won the World Cup a few times, so he knows what it takes. And probably he also has it, what it takes. Mm-hmm. So based, although it has been maybe quite a while, but still, he should have some kind of, he should still have it in him.
Yeah. Another favorite, the top seed who was knocked out was Gukesh, the world champion. Probably there are people who say, why did he play at all? I mean, because he doesn't have to qualify for the candidates. And what are you doing to yourself? How do you see that?
Yes, well, I think that, for example, he should not have played the Grand Swiss. That's a decision that I don't understand. I mean, I think it's very noble that he is doing it. But on the other hand, he's a world champion, and he should also respect his own status as a world champion. And I don't think that playing the Grand Swiss, it's something a world champion should play. However, okay, this World Cup, especially, or maybe only because it's in India, and in India, when he has this special status, well, I saw how he was brought to the game by a corridor of security guards. And this was kind of...
Really?
Yeah, that was kind of amazing to watch, you know, that, of course, India is completely crazy regarding chess. So I understand that, I mean, that he's doing it for India, and which is kind of I like that. But okay, still, he had more to lose than to win. And so in this sense, yeah, you could still question if it was a good decision. But I liked it, you know, in India, for the home crowd, you know, but if it were in any other country, I think he should have skipped it.
Yeah, well, or he might be attracted by good prize money. I mean, the top prices are interesting. Well, do you think he's beyond that point?
Yeah, I think I think also in general he likes to play chess, but I think also. Well, I don't know exactly how his private life looks like, but I think there should be a lot going on in his private life because he's world champion and everybody wants a piece of him. So I would normally advise somebody, okay, you cannot do everything. And you have to be, sometimes you have to be able to say no. Because I think he's doing probably a lot of PR stuff in India, for example, which takes away the focus of chess. And well, at the same time, they expect him to do a lot of PR stuff, and at the same time, they expect him to play well. Okay, I understand he's still not even 20, so. So it means that, okay, he should have a lot of energy, but still, even for a young guy like him, at some point, you need energy. And I think those kind of things, they absorb a lot.
Yeah. Well, and of course, he should be happy to play because that's what he loves to do best. And for instance, at recent events like the European Club Cup, where he did very well. It's always great to see when he is clearly enjoying it again and showing us what he's capable of.
Yes, but that's also the risk, you know, that when he's not showing what he's capable of, people like to bash him a lot, you know, for that he's a world champion and that he's not showing results of a world champion and stuff like that. So, and I think they should praise him for playing that much. Well, he's not actually obliged to do so. So they should people should be a bit more grateful than just to speak about results only.
Well, and especially because it's totally undeserved, and it seems that he's one of those victims of the tendency to just bash people these days. I mean, if you're out there and you're doing well, then bad news will arrive as well.
Yeah, that's a pity. There's a lot of hate, and also you have a lot of, let's say, Carlsen haters, you know. Although Carlsen did so much for chess, you know, and brought a lot of money for chess, you know, and... well, I cannot. It's not that I always agree with what Carlsen has been doing, but overall, I mean, I'm also a big fan of Carlsen, and I think also Gukesh is a very nice and good world champion and very humble character, you know. And I mean, I wish that my kids would be like him, you know. but when they are like their father, I'm afraid. I fear the worst.
This podcast is brought to you by DGT, the chess innovators. At DGT, We want to bring people together and help them grow through play by supporting chess and creating innovative, high-quality products for players everywhere. To find your nearest DGT dealer, please visit our website at dgt.nl.
So another person who didn't have to play because he already qualified for the candidates was Anish Giri from the Netherlands. What did you think of his decision to play? An understandable decision given the prize fund, and why not? Or why take the risk? Well, it's not really a risk. But.
I don't see what's the risk. I mean, the risk was, I think for him, the risk would be that, you know, he's a father and has three kids. So, mm-hmm. I mean, he would be, if he do, and why to be away from your family, let's say, right? Okay, because he has enough events anyway. Yes, still, if I can say, coming up.
Yeah, you mean he could be away for a month if things go well. Yeah.
So, and then, okay, he's probably playing in Qatar. He's playing Global Chess League. So, I mean, the guy has enough things to do. I mean, he played the European Team Championships. So, European Club Cup. So, but honestly, I believe that, you know, Anish, he lost India, and he gets a lot of publicity for good reason, by the way, because the guy is very witty and he's very open. And but I think it's kind of mutual. I mean, they love him in India, and he loves them back. Yeah, and it's kind of nice PR and everything. So,
and he's been playing very, very well this year. I mean, let's not forget that. So why not? I mean, if this is your profession and there's a big challenge like this, why wouldn't you play?
For sure he was playing well till Goa. But you also want to keep your streak alive, and which basically ended in Goa. So
yeah, you think the part of success is knowing when to say no.
Yeah, and also to listen to your body and everything. But I believe that, well, his incentive was mainly that, you know, to have a, he has many Indian friends, and he loves hanging out with them, you know, and he loves to speak to the media. So, okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Okay, well, he was eliminated by Donchenko, one of the German players who did really well, who was doing really, really well. Were you surprised by the performances of the Germans? I mean, you've been playing in the Bundesliga for many years. You know them well. Were you surprised?
Well, you know that in the last round of the European Team Championship, Holland played against Germany in the last round, and you know they have a young team, and they have a dangerous team. So, and they disappointed because they finished only fourth, while they had Kemer and they had candidate Bluebaum, and they had this guy Fredrik Swane, also a dangerous customer. Who eliminated Gukesh.
As he shows in Goa again.
Yeah. And then you have Donchenko, who didn't even make it to the team. So, they have a young team, so dangerous players. So, and I know that Donchenko can play really well. Also, that sometimes it's the opposite. And here he's clearly feeling it. So, I'm not surprised that, you know, also Bluebaum, to be honest, it was a surprise for me that he qualified in the Grand Swiss for the candidates. Mm-hmm. But also the guy won the European individual championship, I think, twice. So,
yes.
So the guy must have some qualities.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, we cannot deny that.
Well, you might say, yeah, you might say that Bluebaum, that he qualified more or less at the expense of Vincent Keimer, who was on the verge of qualifying in the Grand Swiss, and who was just eliminated here, which I think every chess lover will regret, because he's been playing so creatively recently and doing so well, and he was clearly one of the favorites. I think he was seeded fourth, and it's a pity that he goes out. How do you see that?
Yeah, actually, I was also rooting for Vincent to qualify, because let's say regarding playing style, it's actually him and Fabi. I'm there's mm-hmm. like two players for me because I think they are always pushing. So this is kind of I like very much. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, you have some other players, the young Indian players. They also push. Obviously, but actually, I like a bit more Fabi and Vince, the way they are playing. So, Canada is always a nice tournament to follow, and you want the tournament to be as packed as possible, you know, and yeah. A tournament which is so hard to predict who's going to win it. But, yeah. I think Vince has to wait a few years now.
Yeah, it's sad for him. Another one who has been in the limelight for the past years and was clearly one of the favorites was Nordibek Abdusatorov, who also was eliminated relatively early. How do you see that?
Yes, well, I felt like he had not, because he was not doing so well recently. So he was already in such a great shape. And apart from that his playing style, that he's a very aggressive player. But if you lose basically one game in the World Cup, you're one leg in the grave, basically. So, yeah. And I don't see how he could avoid losing a game here or there with his playing style, playing very aggressively, but also paying the price for it. So I didn't consider him to be one of those guys that could qualify easily. I mean, I was counting more on Kemer, I was counting more on Prague, and I was not
you
sure
think what they are slightly more solid, or
yeah, and I was not sure what to think about Arjun Irigaisi, because he's also has a very aggressive playing style, and
yeah,
which it makes him sometimes score 8 out of 9 in a tournament, but it means that he won 8 games and lost one. And this losing this one game could be lethal in this World Cup.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Veselin Topalov in the Tripoli knockout world championship when I think he started was 8 out of 8 or something, and then in fact, well, a crazy score and winning.
Yeah, and then he lost to Kazymjanov, or what was it? He lost to Kazymjanov.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, well, another player with a huge global following is obviously Hans Niemann. He also got knocked out, and he got knocked out by Lorenzo Ludici, and that's a player who. Well, attracted a lot of attention, and you know him very well because you've been the coach of the Italian team where he's obviously playing. What kind of player is he? I guess many people, they don't know much about him. Well, what can you tell us about him?
Well, let's say some people would just consider him to be a coffee house player. I mean, he's playing, I was at the national coach of Italy for 4 years. So I had to deal a lot with Lodici and in some way, he reminded me that he was playing more or less the same aggressive style as I did. So that part I kind of liked. But, you know, when I had Huizing to play, for example, some Catalan, and then he starts to play first move F4, of course, I want to kill him, yeah? So this is...
Yeah.
Or, yeah, and... but, okay, let's say once there was this match between Italy and Netherlands in the Budapest Olympiad. So, of course, a special match because, Italy is playing against my home country. And I decided to put, Italy was a huge underdog anyway, so there's not much we had to lose. So I decided to put Lodici, the most aggressive player, against Anis. Because I know Lodici is a crazy player, and I had the feeling that Anis might not like it, you know, to play such aggressive player and would actually doesn't care. Because you know, would put in Volcaturo, he's a good player, but he was playing much more solid and more classical. And now he had to face this crazy guy, Lodici, who can basically beat anybody, but he can also lose to anybody. Mm. I mean, I've seen many games that after 10 moves, he is just minus two against 2300 player. So, I'm not a big fan of Hans, to be honest. Although you could say he's good.
And you forget to mention that he actually won that game at the Olympiad against Anish Giri.
Yeah, and he also beat Leko. Yeah. Also, just
So how old is he, Lodici?
I think he should be like 24, something like this, 24, 25. So he's still pretty young, but he's playing very optimistic chess.
And that can go either way.
Yeah, and we had this discussion with some guys. We were watching now his tiebreak match with Savion. And he said, oh, this guy is taking these decisions so easily, so quickly, these critical moments. He doesn't even think, like, it's normal. And as a coach, it drives you crazy. You know, I was watching once his game with Adams in the Olympiad, and he has 15 minutes on the clock. He has one big decision to take, and he just he could use 10 minutes for his decision, but no, he's using less than a minute to sacrifice a rook, which was probably losing. Instead, he could play a normal move, which was winning.
Yeah.
But okay, that's our Lorenzo. So
Well, as we are talking, the tiebreaks they were still going on. Is he still in?
He's still in. They're now playing the blitz, and he won the first game. So second game, it looks like he's worse. So, but okay,
so it might be Armageddon.
Well, still, will be two more blitz games before your favorite Armageddon will start.
Yeah. He's one of the people who caught our attention. Another one is obviously José Eduardo Martínez, who knocked out Abdou Satorov, who is normally known as a blitz animal, but apparently he's doing well here as well. We also know him as Jospim, if I pronounce that correctly. What kind of a player is he?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
He attracted a lot of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know him so well because he's kind of just, especially he made his fame online. I play very little online because simply it's not that I don't want to, because it's simply I don't have the time to do so. I mean, back in the days, I mean, you're playing a lot online, and actually, but when you're free man,
you more or less invented internet chess, didn't you?
Well, that would be too much, but yeah, I mean, I was there.
I remember 20 hour battles, and
yeah. Back in the days when I was still playing on ICC, you know, and I was there from the early days, like 93 or something like that. And you're like a free man, and you had no responsibilities, and life was, you know, you had time. But times have changed. Of course, I only know him from this ridiculous. Was it a clash of claims, or what was it with Kramnik? You know, kind of.
Yeah, first the clash of claims and then the clash of blames.
That was so ridiculous.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 So that was very sad episode of chess, I believe.
It's not so the right way to.
I don't know him so well. And if you talk about him, you should also talk about this guy Lazovic, who is also, let's say, an internet blitz specialist and very good at it. And still, so yeah. And you're wondering actually how strong they could be in classical chess. But I have no idea how good they really are. You know, and so far his chess, of course, the way he beat Abdou Satorov, for example, and he also had a nice match against Sarana. So so that was kind of looked pretty solid performance.
You love chess. Why don't you try New in Chess? With readers in 116 countries, New in Chess is the premier chess magazine in the world. What will you get? Exciting chess games explained by the best experts in a clear and accessible way. On-the-spot reports of the biggest events. Top-notch instruction. Independent journalism. Chess history that comes to life. And great interviews. New in Chess, the way you want it. The beautifully produced paper edition or the digital edition for phone, tablet or PC. Give it a try. Go to our website, newinchess.com/magazine, for more information about subscriptions and special offers.
Yeah. Well, of course, the tournament is still long, but what we've seen is that so many favorites have been knocked out. There's a couple left. Before I want to ask you something else, Luke, who do you think are the favorites now for the final rounds? So we still have Erik Aisien, who obviously can go all the way. Levon Aronian, with all his experience and the way he's playing, who else should be watching?
Yes, well, let me first of all say that whoever my pick would be, nobody has a 50% chance or more to win it. So let's make that clear, yeah? So, but it seems like Erik Gaisje went pretty effortless so far. So that's always, I mean, if you don't lose too much nerves and energy during the event, that's good. The bad thing is that you haven't been really tested yet, like in that your because if you have been tested, it means that you were sharp enough to pass the round. So it can happen that like you said, when things are going too like with Toplov in the World Cup in Libya going too smoothly, you know, you start to think about it too easily, and that's kind of a danger. But yeah, but let's say Erik Gajsi and Levon are definitely potential winners. I also think Le Quang Lim is a guy to watch.
Yep. Yeah, always also very, very solid and very difficult to beat.
Yeah, and he...
Incredible technician, right?
Yeah, and he's pretty good in the quick play, you know, so that's also very important. I don't know about...
And let's not forget Wei Yi.
Yeah. Wei Yi. Yeah, because I'm watching Wei Yi because, you know, he's, for the third year, my... my guy in the Global Chess League. So in end of the year it will be the Global Chess League in Mumbai, and with the he's playing for the third year in for my team, the Triveni Continental Kings, and so of course I'm following him closely as well. Yeah, very dangerous player, but. Yeah, so, and I think...
We should also speak about the Global Chess League. But let's first speak about the favorites. So we have Erik Gajsi, Aronian, Le Quang Lim, Wei Yi. Well, that's a strong quarter.
Should we mention all of them?
What? Well, there's... To be on the safe side, that wouldn't be bad. But one of the other things I wanted we spoke about the clash of claims and the clash of blames, that Martinez, that he played against Vladimir Kramnik, who has been more in the news recently than he ideally should be. Now, finally, FIDE is undertaking action, and they have formally submitted a complaint to the FIDE Ethics and Disciplinary Commission, naming former world champion Vladimir Kramnik as the respondent. The statement also says, the referral follows concern in the chess community about repeated public allegations made by Kramnik against Grandmasters Daniel Naroditsky and David Navarra, and comes after a review of the matter by the FIDE Management Board. How do you see this? I mean, it is a very late reaction, but at least finally there's a reaction.
That apparently something really bad needs to happen first before they come into action. So that's, of course, the whole thing is totally... very sad story, and well, we can definitely agree on the fact that that Kramnik's comments did not improve the life quality of Daniel Naroditsky at all, or improve his life expectancy. And since he has been so stubborn in this subject and so been so aggressive, you know, and so it was about time to stop him, you know. And well, we all know how difficult it was for David Navarra, because he was also let's say, under surveillance of Vladimir Kramnik regarding cheating. And it's not that I would, as you say, put my hand in the fire for anybody regarding cheating or not. But I mean, I think Davy Navarro is one of the least suspects I had who could be cheating. So
yes, I think even suggesting it is quite ridiculous. I mean, for yeah. anyone who knows him. But yeah. let's say many years ago, you worked as a second for Vladimir Kramnik in Mexico and probably on other occasions.
Mainly as a World Championship Mexico 2007. Yeah.
Well, is it something you could have imagined yeah? then? No, I mean people must be amazed by his behavior, but.
Well, actually, I wrote an article recently, which hasn't been published yet, but so you need to wait a little bit. But it's about the mental state of top chess players, and if you play chess on a very high level for many, many years, after being under pressure for, let's say, 30 years, at some point you might pay the price for this. And I mean, if you see, for example, this Ivanchuk crying behind the board after losing a blitz game, it's clear that the guy has his breakdowns from time to time. Well, what happened to Fischer was also he went also kind of, in my opinion, kind of nuts after 72. So, and with Kramnik, to become that good, you need to have some kind of qualities or character traits, like. You need to kind of you need to sacrifice things. You have to be kind of obsessive, dedicated, and it all comes at a price. And at the end of his career, you could already see it. The signs were there when he was giving his press conference at the candidates, which were kind of funny to watch though, but also you could see that the guy looked at a lot of one dimension, very one-sided, and I think here, so basically the signs were there that things were going in the wrong direction, but okay, in hindsight, it's easy to say, obviously, but yeah. And it's come a problem that once you stopped with your career, to find a new challenge.
And well, if the peak has been that high.
Yeah. And then you're just wondering, why would he chose this new challenge to catch cheaters? I mean, I understand that probably cheating is a bigger problem than so far, but I would not really recommend him to take this job as his new profession. But okay, Kasparov chose politics and he chose to choose to catch cheaters, so I don't know if they.
Well, I think the way they did that was quite quite differently. Let's hope that this achieves something and brings back some rest in the chess world. I mean, it's absolutely awful what happened to Daniil Naroditsky, and I very much hope that David Navarro will get the protection that he deserves.
This podcast is brought to you by DGT, the Chess Innovators. DGT introduced digital clocks to the chess world at a time when only analog clocks were used. For over 30 years, DGT has been making the official FIDE chess clock, endorsed by the World Chess Federation. DGT clocks are the world's best-selling chess clocks, the standard in chess timing and used everywhere. To find your nearest DGT dealer, please visit our website at dgt.nl.
You just mentioned the Global Chess League. Look, I mean, it's amazing. I counted you still played more than 50 games this year, which is almost close to the maximum that Botwinnik thought proper. So you you're still very much an active player, but you're also coaching and training more and more. And one of your coaching jobs is with the team that won the Global Chess League 2 years ago. And where did you finish last year?
We also won it, just for your information.
You also won? Oh, you also won. Right? You won twice?
Yeah. Oh, why are you sounding surprised? I think I feel some disrespect here.
Yeah. This goes totally off the rails. In my memory, you only won once. But sorry. So you're defending your title that you completely deservedly won twice.
That sounds very bad.
What can you tell people about the Global Chess League who have no idea what the Global Chess League is?
Well, Global Chess League is basically, it consists of a team of six players, and one is like the icon player, which is like a special player, like Carlsen or Anand or Kukesh, somebody like that. Then you have two very strong superstar players, 2700 plus players. Then you have two female players, and you have one junior player. And my main job is actually to draft the right team. So and in September,
get them together, and you do.
In September, there was the draft was in Mumbai. So I went I was in India in September, and actually my main goal in the draft was to draft the Chinese woman Su Jina. So that was my so that was actually my only job that I assigned
and
myself.
You were probably the only one who had that plan, or
the only one who had this plan to get her at any cost. So
yeah.
Okay. So we already had Firuja, we had Yi, and we had Kostenyuk. We got Sujina, we got Vidit, and Vidit is actually the.
Can you pronounce it a bit slower so people can remember that name, because obviously it's a name that we should watch.
Sujina.
Su Jina.
Yeah. And she's actually, I think she's now number two on the world ranking, female world ranking list, with a rating like 2575. Question is, of course, she's very active, and Hu Yufan is still the highest rated Chinese player, but okay, she is not so active as Su Jina is. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, and so we have Vidit, who's Mumbai-based, so we hope to get a lot of local support from the Indian community in Mumbai. And we have Marc Andrea Maurici from France.
From France.
Yeah.
And your team is an Indian franchise.
Yeah, it's called Triveni Continental Kings.
Yeah. And what is Triveni?
Yeah, Triveni is a big company in India. So, it's a lot with sugar production. But, I think they are a big player in this market.
Yeah, and the rivals for the title will be similar to last time. Or where do you expect?
Let's say
challenge is coming from.
Well, the team of Carlsen was always a dangerous team, but Carlsen has declined to play this year in the Global Chess League. Uh-huh. So, but instead they got now Caruana, which is a slightly, let's say Carlsen still a bit better than Fabi, but still it could be a problem still, that team. But they have also, they have a team with Fabi, Prak Ananda, Anish, and Hui Fan. Also a dangerous team to watch.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and Fabiano, he's had an incredible year so far. So, not to be sneezed at.
Yeah.
That's a great challenge at the end of the year. How important is that for you?
Let's say you want to keep your status. Huh? After the first year, we won it. You were lucky. And then we won the second year. Maybe it was not so lucky. So the third year, if you know me, I'm tired of being modest. So I have to back it up my big mouth. So it's a problem. But
you got tired of being modest a long time ago, and it's probably
yes. I don't want to be remembered for being modest.
Yeah, you don't want to be remembered for not being remembered.
Okay.
We remember you and we keep asking you back because it's always a pleasure, Luke. And thanks for shedding your light on the World Cup. And let's see who will use their 50% chance best in the coming two weeks. It's going to be very exciting. I think it's not easy to predict the outright winner. It's probably easier to guess who will have the best chances to be one of the three to qualify for the candidates. It's been spectacular so far, so no doubt we will see many more surprises. And then let's see what happens in Fide's case against Vladimir Kramnik, and whether you will be successful in your attempt to win the Global Chess League for the third time with your team.
Yeah, good that you remember that you won it already twice. Thank you for that.
Yeah. It's etched in my mind. Thank you, Luke. Yeah. We'll meet again, as they say.
Thank you, Dirk. It was a pleasure here as well.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the New in Chess podcast. The New in Chess podcast can be listened to on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the New in Chess website. To leave a comment, go to our socials or email us directly at podcast@newinchess.com. If we've gotten you in a mood to buy a great chess book, please go to the webshop on our website, newinchess.com. There you will find a wide selection of fine books and all the details how to easily order them. And this is also the place to subscribe to New in Chess magazine, the magazine that has readers in 160 countries around the world. We thank our sponsors at DGT for their support and hope to have you back for the next episode of the New in Chess podcast.